You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It has been nearly three decades since Lisa Hauser first came forward with allegations of sexual abuse by a Catholic priest at Gonzaga University in Spokane. Hauser, who now lives in the Midwest, says a well-known priest who ran the school's abroad program in Florence, Italy, assaulted her when she was a student back in 1990. His name is Father Bruno Sagata. That same priest now leads a congregation here in Idaho. This story came to light because of our guest today. Emily Schwing is a reporter with the investigative public radio show and podcast Reveal. She is joining us live with us right now to talk more about her investigation into Father Bruno, as well as his connections to the Boise Catholic Diocese. Emily, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Gemma.
And I want to mention just a quick note that we will be talking briefly about a sexual assault. So a trigger warning for anyone who could be affected by that. So Emily, I mentioned in the very beginning that this was a program through Gonzaga University to Florence, Italy. How long has this program been around, but also how big of a deal is it for the university community in Spokane?
Yeah, so the university, Gonzaga University's study abroad program in Florence, Italy is quite well known. You could say it is famous. It's been around for more than 50 years. And the alumni who have attended that program are very enthusiastic supporters of it, even after they've participated in the program. So these findings are quite significant for a school as prominent as Gonzaga is, just because there is a lot of alumni support for that program. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about Father Bruno. Can you describe him during the days when he was leading that program in Florence? I mean, what was he well-liked?
Yes. So Bruno Sagata is Italian. He was ordained in 1976. He went to work for Gonzaga in 1982. He's very outgoing, quite gregarious, fun-loving. This is how alumni describe him. If you find him on social media, you can see somebody who is just quite a vibrant personality. His art is beloved. He does a lot of painting of Italian landscapes, of Catholic idolatry. He's just this really outgoing, fun-loving guy. Mm-hmm. Students described him in the program as having a T-shirt emblazoned with the word guru across the front of it, and he was always participating in parties with students, and often they say he was responsible for supplying the alcohol at those parties during the time he was teaching in Florence, Italy.
Okay, so let's talk maybe a little bit more about him in the sense of Lisa Hauser, who is the woman who has come forward with these allegations, talking basically about a darker side of him and what she says happened to her when she was in Florence with Father Bruno. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So Lisa Hauser attended Gonzaga University in her junior year, which was the school year 1990 to 1991. She attended the Florence program. And in 1991, she says that she was sexually assaulted by Father Bruno. They had taken a sort of a weekend trip to Carrara, which is very well known for its marble quarries. They'd hiked through the quarries for a day and then hiked up to this hostel they were staying at, where Father Bruno provided Lisa and another student with wine and dinner, and it went well into the night. And that's when she said, she was drunk and he took advantage of her.
And how did you first come in contact with Lisa? I mean, how did all of this kind of come to be?
Yes. So in 2018, in December of that year, I put out my first sort of deep dive into the Jesuit order of the Catholic Church. I had found that there were at least 20 credibly accused Jesuit priests who had been retired to a home on Gonzaga University's campus. And they'd been living there for as far back as 1986 until 2015. The reason I became aware of these men is because a lot of them had worked as part of their careers as Jesuit priests in Western Alaska. And there had been a large number of civil lawsuits filed against the Oregon province of the Jesuits in the early 2000s against many of those priests who had worked in Western Alaska. About 80% of the priests that we found had spent at least some part of their career in Native communities in Alaska or on Indian reservations in the lower 48. And when I started looking even more into this, I found that the number of accused Jesuits in the Northwest region, so it includes states like Oregon, Washington, Montana, Alaska, and Idaho, that number of accused priests is more than three times higher than anywhere else in the United States.
And we should note, if you are not familiar with Jesuit, it's an order of priests within the Catholic Church. So can we go back to Lisa's allegations? And after she says that Father Bruno assaulted her, what did she do, Emily?
Yeah, so in 1991, after she returned from the program, she started her senior year that fall, and she wrote a letter, a two-page letter to, or she says she wrote a letter to then university president, who's also a Jesuit priest. His name was Bernard Coughlin. And then a few days later, she says that she was called into a meeting with Father Coughlin, where he expressed empathy and compassion for Father Bruno, but also during that time discovered a dark family secret that Lisa was carrying with her, and threatened to expose that secret if she made her allegations against Father Bruno public. So essentially, Lisa did not move any further in reporting her assault at the time, and really didn't pick it up until 2003, when she found out that there were problems with the university's study abroad program in Florence. A lot of things were starting to come to a head. Administrators had flown to Florence actually to fire Father Bruno. They had decided that his behavior was getting a little bit out of hand with respect to supplying students with alcohol and throwing parties, and they just wanted to create a safer environment for students. So that's Lisa and to file a complaint both with the university and then also with the Catholic Diocese of Boise, where Father Bruno is home based.
Mm-hmm. Do we know if this kind of thing happened to any other women who came in contact with Father Bruno?
I don't have confirmation of that. It has been talked about, but I have not been able to confirm that there are other survivors that would allege abuse by Father Bruno.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with reporter Emily Schwing. She has just produced a new episode of the investigative radio show and podcast Reveal. This program digs into sexual harassment and abuse allegations against a Catholic priest who ran Gonzaga University's abroad program in Florence, Italy. And Emily, you just mentioned Father Bruno is a priest within the Boise Diocese. I'm curious. I'm assuming the Boise Diocese is aware of Lisa Hauser's allegations.
Yeah, so in 2003, when she filed a third complaint with the university, she also went to the Boise Diocese. She and her mother traveled to Boise. They both say she was interviewed at length. The woman who interviewed her in Boise took pages of notes from what they recall, but then did not follow up. There was never a return phone call or any sort of contact after that. And then again in 2018, Lisa filed another complaint with the Boise Diocese, at which point she got an email from the chancellor of the Boise Diocese who is also the director of child, youth, and adult protection. That email came in September of 2018. It said that they had received Lisa's complaint that Father Bruno would be retired, that an announcement would be made from the pulpit that the Bishop of Boise had received a credible allegation of sexual misconduct against Father Bruno, and that Father Bruno was no longer allowed to participate in ministry in the Boise Diocese or anywhere else.
Okay, but we know that's not the case.
Right, exactly. So I found out 2.5 months after this email was sent. It was sent on September 24th of 2018. And 2.5 months later, Father Bruno presided over a Catholic funeral mass there in Boise. And then last summer, he was sent up to Our Lady of the Lake, which is a parish and church in McCall. And now he participates in ministry in 3 churches in that part of Idaho, in McCall, at St. Jerome in Riggins, and then at St. Catherine Drexel in Cascade.
Have you spoken with him about these allegations against him?
I very briefly spoke to Father Bruno. I did call him. I did want to ask him his perspective. And he told me that the allegations against him were, quote, dealt with by the diocese years ago, unquote. And then he hung up the phone. Hmm. And that was in April.
You know, I think this is interesting because before this interview, I was actually reading back in 2003 when he was let go by Gonzaga. And they did an article within their own newspaper. And there was strong support for Father Bruno amongst these students who, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, these alumni, I mean, you know, it's probably fair to say that not every student had a similar experience to Lisa's experience, right? What has the response, so I'm curious, what has the response been since you've broken open this story?
You know, it's been really interesting, Gemma. It's been a very quiet response. Gonzaga University and the Boise Diocese, as well as the Jesuit Order, have all put out statements. Now, Father Bruno Sagata is not a Jesuit. He was working for a Jesuit university, but he's a diocesan priest. So okay. The Jesuits don't take a lot of responsibility for this particular situation. No one has complained about the actual reporting. No one has refuted it or said that they didn't believe Lisa's allegations or that I got things wrong. What they have said is, like, for example, with the Boise Diocese, they've said that they couldn't find anybody else to corroborate the allegations against Father Bruno. But I have a lot of questions about that. There's a 2005 thesis that was written by a senior at Gonzaga who had attended the Florence program the year prior, in which she describes Father Bruno's behavior and the fact that he encouraged cheating, binge drinking, and promiscuity for students that were attending the program. And she also wrote that Father Bruno's presence created, quote, a very dangerous dynamic, giving religious sanction to morally questionable activities. So I've asked everyone about this, the university, I've asked the Boise Diocese, and I really have not gotten direct response to questions about that thesis or about whether or not they feel that Father Bruno's behavior was in keeping with what is expected of a Catholic priest.
Well, and also, I mean, with him being a part of the Lady of the Lakes parish in McCall, I mean, you go on their website and he is the pastor now. So
yeah, and especially now with COVID-19, you know, his masses are
online.
They post the video online, exactly.
So how have you talked to the Boise Diocese about how can they say they will, you know, I guess retire him was the word. And yet here he is as a priest. I mean, and not just a visiting priest, but I mean, he is the pastor. He is the religious figure, you know, overseeing this parish.
Yeah. So earlier this month, I got an email from the spokesman at the Boise Diocese, Jean Fudness, who told me that there were some discussions about Father Bruno and his retirement, but that he made a very strong case for why he should not be retired. And so they decided not to retire him. Now, that doesn't really reconcile the fact that they sent this email to Lisa Hauser saying that he is not allowed to participate in ministry anywhere. So I don't have a lot of clarity for you on what's happening there and why those two statements don't match up.
So Emily, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but besides investigating the allegations against Father Bruno, you also looked into the Jesuit Order of Priests and their connection to abuse in a remote Alaskan village. So can you talk a little bit more about that? But also you learned some things about a man named Father Reynolds.
Yeah, Father Brad Reynolds was, you know, his last position held as a Jesuit priest was also at Gonzaga University. He had worked there for quite some time as the assistant director of mission and ministry, where he offered spiritual guidance to students and took them on retreats and things like that. Prior to when he took that job, which was in 2012, he was also an artist in residence at Gonzaga University, and he would travel to and from Alaska dating back into the 80s. He was never assigned officially to work in any Alaska Native village, but he would visit and take photos. He's an amateur photographer and a writer. Some of his work was published in National Geographic. But he was also alleged to have abused at least four Alaska Native men in the 1990s and also in the 1980s. And the Jesuit order did investigate those allegations. They have said that they didn't find any evidence that the allegations are credible. However, all four survivors who allege abuse against Father Reynolds are receiving settlement payments that come out of a bankruptcy settlement that was finalized in 2011 by the Oregon Province of the Jesuits after years of being sued, civil lawsuits that all hundreds of civil lawsuits were filed against the Oregon Province of the Jesuits alleging sexual abuse in the early 2000s.
So you've, in your reporting, you've kind of revealed a pattern, which looks similar to this. When Jesuit priests in the Pacific Northwest, like Father Reynolds, for example, have had complaints that are made against them in parishes, you know, in towns and different communities, they often have ended up at Gonzaga University. Has Gonzaga or Jesuit leadership taken any steps to change that? Or is that still a pattern that we're continuing to see that you dug up?
It's a really good question. So I need to back up just a minute. I mean, in my first investigation, I found that a lot of these priests were retired to Gonzaga, and that was a decision made by the Jesuit order, not necessarily Gonzaga University. The current president of Gonzaga University, his name is Thane McCullough. He had said following our first investigation that he was not made aware of these men living on campus and coming in contact with students until sometime between 2011 and 2016. We didn't get a lot of clarity there on what and when he actually knew a lot of this stuff. And so then I started digging a little deeper into Gonzaga, and that's when I found out about Father Bruno Sagata, who we just talked about, but also Father Reynolds. And there's actually eight other priests who I have found, all Jesuits, who have also worked at the university, not just retired there. So I found that there are more priests who taught at Gonzaga in comparison, who have been alleged to have abused in comparison to any other Jesuit university in the United States. There are 27.
Really?
There are 27 Jesuit universities in the country, and Gonzaga seems to have the highest number of credibly accused priests associated with its staff and faculty, as well as the number of priests who have retired there.
So what does the current president or say about that?
Right. So last spring, Gonzaga University established a commission to address the clergy's sex abuse crisis very broadly and its impact on the community. We've asked specifically about what the goals of that commission are, what they aim to do, who is part of it, and what kind of work they're doing. But I've never gotten direct answers about that. And I've asked for sit-down interviews with Gonzaga University's administration dozens and dozens of times. And all of my invitations have been declined. In this latest investigation, we really have not received much response. Quite honestly, it's a canned response that we've seen from other statements that have been put out about our reporting. They believe in the human dignity of all people. They, rely on their Jesuit values, and they're working with this commission that they've established. But that still doesn't answer a lot of questions about why Father Sagata was allowed to work at Gonzaga University for so long. It doesn't answer questions about, you know, what they knew about Father Reynolds. He was sued in 2004. He wasn't hired at the university until 2012. There's just a lot of questions that still remain unanswered for me.
You know, and obviously, I mean, the Mountain and Pacific Northwest are not the only regions that have experienced these types of abuse in the Catholic Church. I mean, you know, I think a huge thing that came to light was, you know, the book Spotlight, the movie, which was around the Boston Archdiocese. I mean, so this is something that we have seen, you know, in it seems like every location in the United States. Are there themes that have stood out to you in reporting this in the last few years?
I think that the two things that really just continue to haunt me in my reporting is the impact on Indigenous communities in North America. When you're talking about 90 credibly accused Jesuits and 80% of them spent some time in a Native community, that's very dark. The other thing that really bothers me is just sort of the lack of transparency. I've seen a lot of statements from the Jesuits and diocese and the university saying, you know, they really believe in supporting victim survivors and they want to be transparent. But that would mean that they would have to answer some of the questions that, you know, I have and that I know, you know, now your listeners have. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. we just don't have those answers right now.
Have you been able to talk with Lisa Hauser since this latest episode aired?
Yes, I have. I have. She expressed a lot of relief that this story was finally out in the open. Lisa has carried her allegations with her for almost 30 years in an effort to get somebody to listen to her. And when she received those emails from the Catholic Diocese of Boise in the fall of 2018, I think she really felt like somebody finally heard her. You know, she was told Bruno would be listed as retired. He was not allowed to participate in ministry anywhere. And then to find that he had presided over this funeral mass was just a real blow. So I think she's told me that now that the story is out there, you know, it's sort of like a deep breath for her. But that also doesn't mean that it's over. I mean, Father Bruno is still, they just posted a mass from June 27th, which was 2 days ago, on their website, on the McCalled, Our Lady of the Lakes McCalled Church's website. So, I'm not sure, you know, if that will change.
I want to thank you so much, Emily, for talking to us today. We've been speaking with reporter Emily Schwing about investigating sexual abuse allegations against Catholic priests in Idaho and in the Pacific Northwest. Again, Emily, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gemma.
Absolutely. And we will link to the full episode of Reveal on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. Up next, the latest in a groundbreaking case for transgender rights. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Thank you.